This is the Business of College Sports podcast with your host, the founder of businessofcollegesports.com, Christy Dosh. Find her on Twitter and Instagram at sports biz myths.
Welcome to the Business of College Sports podcast. I'm your host, Christy Dosh, the sports biz myths. And today we are going to chat all about conference realignment. You know how much I love NIL and how much we've been talking about it on the podcast lately, but I can't ignore that conference realignment is now in full swing. We've had Oklahoma and Texas declare their intention to leave the Big 12 and join the SEC. And that has, of course, led to conversations about what will happen to the Big 12. Will they go and grab members from other conferences? Or will they eventually end up disbanding with their members choosing to go to other conferences? We all know from previous rounds of conference realignment that when one domino falls, there tend to be a whole lot of other dominoes that have to tumble as well. So we are just at the beginning of what could be a long process. I know when I covered this back in 2010, 2011, 2012, this was a two-year process last time when we saw major conference realignment. And it sort of remains to be seen what it will look like this time around. However, that is not the focus of our podcast today. I asked Oliver Luck to join me to talk about what it was like to be the athletic director at West Virginia during the last round of conference realignment and what it really looks like from the inside to be navigating conference realignment and trying to find the right conference partner for your athletic department and for your university. We opted not to talk about what is currently happening due to our other obligations, but we did want to go back and take a look at how West Virginia made this decision last time and what those conversations and mechanics look like from the seat of the athletic director. I'm sure most of you already know who Oliver Luck is, but Oliver was a football student athlete at West Virginia. He went on to play in the NFL before going to law school. He's been in athletics administration for a long time now. We're going to focus on his time at West Virginia, but he's also worked at the NCAA, incredibly familiar with the mechanics of college sports, and he is one of my go-tos that I call when I want to understand more about how college athletics works from the inside. You know, I say on this podcast all the time, I've never worked in college athletics, but I've made friends with lots of people who do that I can call up and ask questions so that I can better understand how they do their jobs and how they make their decisions. So I'm very grateful to Oliver for joining us and letting us peek behind the curtain and telling us everything he remembers about what it was like at West Virginia during the last round of conference realignment. So without further ado, I give you my interview with Oliver Luck. Hi, Oliver. Thank you for joining the Business of College Sports podcast. We are so excited to have you here with us today.
Well, thank you. It's a great opportunity to reminisce a little bit about a very stressful time period, certainly in my life.
I keep joking and telling people that, you know, as NIL was heating up and I was doing all these press interviews and writing all these things, I said that I hadn't been that busy since conference realignment 10 years ago. And it wasn't 2 days later that the news came out about Oklahoma and Texas. And I was like, wait, I didn't mean I wanted to do this conference realignment thing again. I know I was not ready for that. Well, I thought it would be fun for people to get a little bit of an inside look as to what it's actually like being at a university when this is happening, because obviously you were at West Virginia when we had this last round of conference realignment almost exactly 10 years ago when it sort of kicked off. And even I had to go back and look. Like, I remembered that the whole process seemed to take about 2 years from that first domino falling until everything kind of settled out. So I went back this morning and I was looking at a timeline to kind of refresh my memory because I couldn't even remember like exactly what started. I knew Colorado and Nebraska were kind of right at the beginning, but I was trying to remember which one came first. And luckily there's all sorts of timelines available online. So I was able to go back and find that. And so my first question to you, I'm sort of curious to know, is that something where you were like the rest of us and you didn't know that there was going to be conference realignment until we got news of Nebraska and Colorado? Or as an AD, were there rumblings you heard sort of before the fans found out about it?
Well, it's a great question to start with. The short answer is, I think almost every AD and college president, for that matter, was aware of the chance of realignment, but nobody knew the specifics, right? Everybody kind of realized there was an unsettled atmosphere at that point in college athletics, but I'm not sure anybody had a bead on exactly the steps that would be taken. In my case, it was somewhat interesting. I had served on the board of governors of my alma mater, West Virginia University. It's the board of trustees, right? I was appointed by the governor of the state, who at that point was Joe Manchin, who's now arguably the most powerful senator, you know, in Congress. And, you know, from being on the board of governors, we talked a lot at the board level about the potential for some sort of realignment because the Big East, you know, was a tweener conference, right? Mm-hmm. It was what one could call the AQ, an automatic qualifying conference for, you know, the BCS bowl games. But it also, you know, had a lot of basketball only schools, right? Schools that mm-hmm. didn't play football. So it was just a hybrid, quite honestly. And so we were aware, generally speaking, of the landscape and that things were unsettled. You know, people tend to forget, this is like 2008, 2009, 2010 that I was on the board. People forget about the three schools that left the Big East back in like 2002, 2001. I forget exactly, but Miami, pretty good football school, right? Virginia Tech, pretty good football school, and Boston College, also, you know, a school that's had some great moments on the football field. So, you know, the Big East had already been decimated, if you will, with the departure of those schools. And we added, I think, Louisville at the time, South Florida, maybe somebody else, you know, to replace the three that left. But, you know, we were all aware, I certainly as an AD was aware, that, you know, realignment was something that was going on. Because keep in mind, you know, Penn State had joined the Big Ten to make it 11. You mentioned Colorado and Nebraska. You know, so there was a lot of discussion there. Utah had sort of moved up from the Mountain West, I guess, or the WAC. I can't even remember where exactly they were, you know, and found a slot in the Big 12. So there was enough going on that, you know, going into that job, I said to myself, you know, probably the biggest challenge I'll have is realignment. Usually it's, you know, a new football coach or, right. you know, a new basketball coach or, you know, a new facility that you got to raise $100 million for. But I assumed that my biggest challenge was going to be, you know, realignment at some point. And it happened about a year in, right? About a year into my becoming the athletic director in Morgantown. I was driving with my wife from Morgantown to College Park, Maryland. It was, I think, the opening game of that season, or maybe the second game of that season. And I got the news that Pitt and Syracuse had left the Big East, had left the conference. Those were obviously both good football and very good basketball schools. And I thought to myself, wow, this is going to be a challenging time. Here we go. You know, the carousel is starting to move.
So, and that's an interesting point you bring up too, that, you know, you sort of got this call where you found out about Pitt and Syracuse, but, you know, there's always a lot of questions around how this kind of stuff goes down and who's calling who and that kind of stuff. But as a member of the conference, when another member leaves, I can't even figure out that. I don't want to ask you a leading question, but, you know, what does that look like? Who's calling to tell you that? And do you know before it breaks on, you know, ESPN or whatever outlet is the first to get it? Or are you finding out at the same time that fans are finding out?
I may have had a heads up of, you know, 30 minutes or 60 minutes or something, but pretty much finding out at the same time it became public. I'll give both University of Pittsburgh and Syracuse a lot of credit. They kept it quiet. Right. You know, and it's as we know from Texas and Oklahoma, it's a very difficult thing to keep quiet because you got a lot of various constituencies. Everybody wants to be in the know. Right. And, you know, the more people that are in the know, the harder it is to keep it quiet. Right. So I was given a little bit of a heads up, but not much. In fact, I remember my deputy AD was the one who had called me and said, hey, just heard that, you know, Pitt and Syracuse are leaving. And I said, Mike, I'm like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours out from, you know, the stadium, from College Park, from Maryland Stadium, where we were playing the Terps. I said, you know, find the commissioner, because I knew he was going to be at that game, a gentleman named John Marinata, who recently passed away. I said, find John and put us in an empty suite. I've got to talk to John to see what the heck's going on. You know,
that was exactly what my next question was going to be to you was, you know, when you get that news, who's the first person you call? But, you know, that sounds like a convenient situation that it just so happened the commissioner was going to be there at your game and that you could have that time to meet immediately.
That's right. So we convened John and I in an empty suite, you know, at the Maryland Stadium. And John was sitting on a high back chair, like at a bar, you know. And it was, you know, whatever, 11 o'clock in the morning or something. And all of a sudden, John's phone rang. And he, I could hear the other person saying, you know, so-and-so passed away. And this is terrible news. And John fainted and fell off the stool. And, you know, literally fell down to the ground, you know. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've been a year into this job. Our conference is falling apart and the commissioner just, you know, passed away. And he, you know, and that was the news, by the way, that Dave Gavitt, you know, who was a legendary Big East commissioner back in the day, that Dave Gavitt had passed away, you know. And so, you know, that hit John like a ton of bricks. He was already completely stressed out, you know.
Talk about a bad day.
Yeah, it was really a very difficult day. But, you know, you find out and you know, I said to John, what are we going to do? And I don't recall quite honestly what our discussion was about. But I guess what I was saying to myself was, I know that this conference isn't going to make it. We were down to 6 football schools. Right. And, you know, there's you can't have a season with only, you know, 6 members. I guess you could play everybody home and away, you know, sort of like you do in Pop Warner or something. But it was clear to me that we would have to, you know, to make a some kind of a valiant effort to figure out where we may be able to find, you know, a home, right? Because that, you know, that's as you well know, as every listener, I'm sure, to the podcast knows, your conference affiliation is of critical importance. It's existential. And this was really, for West Virginia University, I viewed it as an existential, you know, threat to the school. And we had been, you know, the university had been in a number of different conferences. We were independent for many, many years. There was the Atlantic 10. There was the old, Eastern 8. There was the old Southern Conference way back in the day. You know, so schools move around. But, you know, given the high stakes, this was clearly an existential threat. That's at least the way I viewed it.
So did you know right away that you needed to be looking for options in other conferences, or was there still a thought that the Big East could be saved and that other football schools could be added to save it?
I think because of the addition of, you know, Louisville, South Florida, I guess Cincinnati was the third school that we added, you know, after Tech and Miami and BC left, right? So we added those schools. I looked around and said, you know, we just lost 2 more. I don't think we can add 2 more that are, quite honestly, at high enough of a level to keep us in. And people weren't saying this at the time, but to keep us in a so-called Power 5 conference, right, or a Power 6 conference. You know, there just wasn't, we believed, you know, the quality of schools that we needed. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just getting from 6 to 8. 8 was a bare minimum to begin with. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you only have 7 conference games and you've got to schedule a whole bunch of non-conference games. So, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, the Big East remaining schools realized they would have to go up to 12 or to 14. And that became the AAC, the American Athletic Conference. And, you know, and they built it back up to be a pretty strong league. But to me, it was pretty clear we would have to exhaust every avenue, you know, to figure out is there another home, and whether it's the Big Ten, and we're neighboring states to Big Ten schools like, you know, Penn State and Ohio State. Is it the SEC or neighboring to, you know, Kentucky? Is it the ACC? You know, lots of neighboring states there as well. Mm-hmm. So those were the 3 options. You know, I sort of dismissed, my president and I, Jim Clemens, who's now at Clemson University, Jim and I dismissed the Pac-12 as a possibility, just given, you know, the geography.
Right.
But we thought, you know, let's go investigate, you know, these 3 other conferences. Fortunately, West Virginia not only had, you know, a pretty positive history in terms of, you know, quality athletics and Final Fours and football team, you know, championships, all that sort of stuff. Right. We were more than competitive, but we're also in sort of that sweet spot where we're sort of the northernmost southern state and the southernmost northern state, you know, and, you know, we're sort of the, you know, we're in the east, we're on the western side of the Appalachian, so we're a little bit more Midwestern, but, you know, we also have a long history with a lot of schools that were in the ACC, you know, in Carolina and Virginia and you name it. So we had, I think, a pretty beneficial location, right, that allowed us to at least investigate, you know, some of the opportunities that may exist in those three other conferences.
What can you tell us about what the conversations look like with sort of your conference peers? There were obviously other schools in the Big East, you know, football schools who were looking for new homes at the same time. How much are you all, you know, commiserating with each other versus seeing each other maybe as competition? Like, hey, this conference is only going to take, you know, one or two of us. And, you know, so what does that kind of look like behind the scenes in terms of how you sort of communicate and move on together?
Yeah, it's a real sort of, I think, difficult dance, and it's more than problematic. Because, you know, with the Big East, we wanted, you know, to see our conference mates, you know, succeed, right? But at the end of the day, you don't really know if, you know, it's like the musical chair games, right? There's two schools and only one spot available, and you might be fighting, you know, a former conference, you know, ally for that one spot. So I think it's difficult to sort of profess, you know, fealty or loyalty, if you will, to the conference. And at the same time, ultimately, as an AD, you know, my obligation, my responsibility was to do the best thing for West Virginia University. So, you know, that sort of drove our thinking. And ultimately, I think that boils down to sort of the decision that my president, Jim Clements, and I both made, along with our, you know, board chairs and other board chair and other folks at the university, is, you know, this was going to be difficult to reconstruct, you know, the Big East, and that, you know, the first order of business was to try to, you know, find a new home. And we did that, you know, relatively quickly by filing a lawsuit against the Big East. We filed it in Monongalia County Court, which is where Morgantown is located. I think every judge in that court, you know, went to WVU Law School and undergraduate degree from WVU. So we were pretty aggressive about letting everybody else know, okay, you know, we're going to try to get out, and we think if we can get out, you know, in the appropriate sort of time limits, that we will have a chance at a spot in another conference. So I think we were pretty clear that we didn't think the conference would stick together.
And I'm sure this differs from school to school, but how involved is the president or the board of governors in these sort of decisions? Are you constantly meeting with them throughout this and talking about options, or is it left more up to you? What does that kind of look like behind the scenes?
Well, I can only, you know, speak to my experience, but our president was actively involved. He had he was relatively new to the position at WVU. He had been the provost at Towson, which is part of the University of Maryland system. So he was well versed with a lot of, you know, a lot of those mid-Atlantic schools and had lots of contacts. So he and I spoke arguably 2-3 times a day just to make sure that we were aligned, you know, with what we were saying. You know, I think he communicated a good bit with the board of governors members, right, at that level. And there was even, you know, discussion, not necessarily on a daily basis, but, you know, we wanted to make sure that, you know, people like Joe Manchin, who at that point was the junior senator from West Virginia, that Jay Rockefeller was the senior senator. We wanted to make sure those folks realized the importance of this issue and mm-hmm. that it was an existential, you know, threat to the university. And you have to keep in mind, you know, West Virginia is a small state, fewer than 2 million people live in the state. There aren't professional teams in the state. So, you know, when West Virginia University plays on a Saturday afternoon or a big Monday basketball game, it's kind of like the pro team for the state, you know, right. People cared about it. And, you know, had we not been able to sort of maintain status in a, you know, in a power conference, I use that term loosely because that term wasn't being used back then. But, you know, if we weren't, you know, able to do that, it was a real, you know, blow economically for, you know, North Central West Virginia, where Morgantown's located. I think, you know, sort of spiritually, you know, for a flagship institution not to be a part of, you know, big games against, you know, Alabama or Penn State or Florida or whatever in bowl game, you know, that would have been a, you know, a gut punch to the state and not just to the university.
Forgive me for not knowing the answer to this one, but what conference was West Virginia in when you were a student athlete?
We were independent back then. And okay. And I think you could go almost to, you know, this was late 70s, early 80s when I was in the school. You could probably go back to that point and identify sort of one of the things that didn't happen. And what didn't happen is that Penn State, Joe Paterno, you know, didn't want to join an Eastern Conference for whatever reason. I never quite figured it out. But, you know, you had so many eyeballs along the East Coast. We played, you know, every year we played Syracuse, we played Boston College, we played Pitt, we played Penn State, we played Maryland, we played Virginia Tech. You know, I mean, those are, you know, all schools. They were all playing each other, right? That was basically, you know, the schedule that lined up and, but there was no conference, right? Everybody was technically independent. And, you know, had, I think, Penn State as sort of the big power, you know, on the Eastern Seaboard back then, had Penn State said, hey guys, let's formalize these relationships and create a conference with, you know, 8, maybe 10 teams. Maybe you add Temple, you know, Rutgers was in there. We all played Rutgers, you know, I mean, we were all literally playing the same schools. Most of us played UConn, you know, so had that materialized, it could have been a different story, I guess, but it didn't, you know, for whatever reason, Penn State didn't want to join. And, you know, so that left, you know, that left the East Coast kind of splintered, and it's a shock because there's so many eyeballs along the East Coast, right? That's you ask Tex Schramm why the Dallas Cowboys, when they were founded, wanted to join the NFC East, and he'll tell you that there were eyeballs because they had New York, Philadelphia, and Washington. You know, why wouldn't Dallas want to join, you know, to become America's team? I mean, that was sort of the theory that Tex had, and it was absolutely spot on. So, yeah, but I think you can go back to the sort of late 70s, early 80s, and the lack of desire that Penn State, you know, had to join that conference, and kind of be, that was maybe the start of the modern era of realignment.
Yeah, and I think when I was researching for my book years ago, and I sat down and I knew I was going to do this chapter on conference realignment, but I was actually having to write the chapter while conference realignment was happening, because I got that book deal in 2011 and it was due to my publisher in 2012. And then I had into like the very first part of 2013 before it went to press. And so we were constantly having to update, you know, who was going where in that chapter. But I also had to go back and write this sort of history of conference realignment and try to identify, you know, a starting point. And I sort of remember the two starting points that I worked from were either going back to the early 80s and sort of the battle over television and the role that television played in conference realignment. And then kind of the second starting point was Penn State making the decision to join the Big Ten. And I've revealed my age before to this audience. I was born in 1981. And so my, you know, knowledge of college football, what I remember happening, doesn't really start till like mid to late 90s for me. When I was in high school and even early college, I didn't go to a college that had a football team. I went to a very small D3 with no football. So my passion wasn't fully ignited till I went to law school at University of Florida and happened to be there at a time that they were winning quite a bit, including national championships. And so then I decided, you know, college football was the greatest thing I'd ever been around. So as I wrote the book, it was super interesting to me to go back and try to learn what those turning points in history were. And I read so much about Penn State and around their decision making and sort of all the dominoes that kicked off. And as we were talking, I was just kind of thinking, you know, you're coming from this unique perspective of having been a football player at West Virginia and then coming back and being the athletic director. And so much of what we hear around conference realignment from fans is around the loss of, you know, partners they're used to playing every year within their conference and some of those natural rivalries that happen within a conference. And was just sort of curious how you think about those things as an AD, as you're thinking about which conference makes sense and sort of the ties you're inevitably going to lose as you change conferences. And there must be like some small, you know, nostalgic part from having played for West Virginia that there must be schools you look forward to having those contests with. Like, how does that sort of more, I guess, emotional, nostalgic side come into play when you're going through this process?
Well, I think there's probably, you know, a good bit of nostalgia in trying to recreate the past when it comes to scheduling. And there's other factors involved as well. Obviously, you know, proximity, cost, everybody wants to have 7 home games, and with only 12 games on the schedule, everybody can't have 7 home games, right? The math doesn't work. Yeah. There's money games that exist. There's state pressure in many cases to play, an in-state school that might not be at the level that, your school is at. So, there's lots of factors. In our case, when we ended up in the Big 12, I remember, distinctly saying to myself, well, we've got to at least start the process because, people schedule games out 10 years in advance or whatever.
Right.
So we've got to at least start the process to get some of those old rivalries back on board. And those old rivalries, in my mind, certainly Pittsburgh, that was the big rival, the backyard brawl. And that was a lot of fun and some great games, Penn State and Virginia Tech, which we ended up doing a neutral site game. I scheduled a neutral site game against Virginia Tech in D.C. And then we wanted to, try to get Virginia on the schedule as well. I know I was unsuccessful. I'm not sure if my successor, Shane Lyons, great guy, smart guy. I don't know if Shane was able to put UVA on the schedule, but all those schools that we had historically played, and you can't play them all in one year. You got to sort of spread them out, to have a, big rivalry game, et cetera, because obviously going into the Big 12, we knew we'd be playing, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas State, Baylor. I mean, some, pretty solid teams. So you have to also, be smart, right, and give your program and your coach a chance to, win some games and not get, beat up by week 7 or 8 of the season. But those rivalries that are, local, that people can jump in the car and drive an hour and a half, are fun. And, so I think every AD, put in that position would say, let's be smart. Let's be prudent. Let's be judicious, but let's figure out how to get some of those games, over the next, 10, 15 years back on the schedule. And of course it takes 2 to tango, right?
Yes.
You could call a school up and say, hey, let's play. Great idea, says, the other AD, but you can't find a window. You can't find the date. TV may have an issue with it. So there's lots of other factors as well, but it was very important in my mind, to try to get some of those old rivals back in the schedule.
Yeah, great. I'm also sort of thinking through, there's a lot we hear every time there's a round of conference realignment about, who reached out to who and how the whole process goes down. As an athletic director, once you've identified, say, one or more conferences that would make sense for you, what do those early conversations with the conference look like? Are you talking to the conference commissioner? How do those conversations sort of begin, and what types of things are you talking about as you both figure out whether this is a good fit or not?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. So how does it really work?
Right?
So all I can share is, my experience with going through this back in the fall of 2011 and, into early 2012. As I had mentioned earlier, we had theoretically at least, 3 conferences that we'd want to check the box and see, is there any opportunity here? The first thing I did, and this was all obviously in consultation with my boss, the university president, I jumped in a plane and flew up to Chicago to talk to Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner. And I said, Commissioner Delaney, don't tell me what you think I might want to hear. I need sort of the hard truth, right? Do we have any opportunity at all, do you believe, Commissioner Delaney, to get into the Big Ten? And Jim said, no. I said, thank you. I'm not going to debate the point or argue it or whatever. This is not a sales call. That eliminated, that opportunity, right? So we said, fine, that's not going to happen. Let's not waste any time on that because you have, limited minutes of the day, hours of the day, et cetera. We did something similar at that point with the ACC. As I'd mentioned, my president was very familiar with a lot of the ACC presidents from his time at the University of Maryland system. So I said, Jim, why don't you call the presidents, get 4 or 5 of them. I'll call 4 or 5 of the ADs that I know in that conference. And then we'll reconnect and see if there's any opportunity. And I basically, said to the athletic directors that I spoke with, I said the same thing. Don't tell me what you think I may want to hear. I just sort of need to operate in the realm of the possible. And if it's not possible that we're an ACC, contender, then let me know. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm not going to, get upset. And the response from those folks that we canvassed in the ACC was we probably didn't have a chance, right? That's what my president was hearing from his colleagues. That's what I was hearing from my athletic director colleagues. And I thanked them, didn't put up a fight, you know, because obviously we needed to then figure out, okay, you know, this is going to be a play for the Big 12. And then we, you know, began to harness whatever resources that we had at West Virginia. And I'll give you an example. One of our very successful alums is a gentleman named Ken Kendrick, who owns the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mm-hmm. And guess who was the chairman of the Baylor board? The Baylor board chairman was Drayton McLean, who owned at that point the Houston Astros. Yep. And I said, you know, I called up Ken, and Ken would, you know, do anything to help his alma mater. I said, Ken, would you mind giving Drayton a call and just seeing, you know, what the interest level may be, right? So, you know, we tried to sort of connect with as many people as we possibly could, you know, through West Virginia alumni, through Don Nealon, our former coach, you know, Hall of Famer. Chuck Ninus at that point was the interim commissioner of the Big 12. This is before Commissioner Bowlesby took over. Chuck was the interim commissioner. You know, Don Nealon and Chuck Ninus were great friends. So, you know, we drafted Don. So anybody that had, you know, a viable opportunity, connection, et cetera, we put to work. And so at the end of the day, it was a group effort. I felt a little bit like a, you know, orchestra conductor, you know, yeah. Making sure that everybody was sort of in tune and aligned. Jim felt the same way. And here's the reason, I think, Christy, is that there are no rules of conference realignment. You know, it's sort of like a kid's game where you just decide to run around and play. Whoever has the ball, you tackle, you know.
But I feel like everyone accuses everyone else of tortious interference. Even my husband, who's not a lawyer, as soon as conference realignment comes up, he always yells out, tortious interference, because, you know, right. You know that claim is going to come from somewhere.
That's right. So, you know, there are no rules. And, you know, we were respectful and I think upfront and transparent, certainly with, you know, what we were trying to do. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we had told the Big East we're out, right? That wasn't a secret. Our former colleagues in that conference knew that, whether it was Louisville, you know, but of course, as soon as Maryland joined the Big Ten, that opened up a spot in the ACC, which Louisville filled. And then, of course, as you remember, the Big Ten also reached out to Rutgers. I don't think because of the strength of their athletic program, because Rutgers had really been struggling. But, you know, New Jersey has got a lot of cable households, and that's sort of the metrics that, you know, Commissioner Delaney had at that time. So, you know, there are no rules. And that's one of the things that I remember I had to sort of keep in mind, you know, as we were going through this process, because ultimately, you know, the end game was for, you know, my institution, West Virginia University, and the institution I had responsibility for to be able to get accepted into a conference. And then the final, the final straw, I guess, if you remember, Missouri was sort of sitting on the fence, you know, SEC, or should we stay in the Big 12? They were sitting on the fence. It seemed like it was for months that this was going on. And, you know, finally they made a decision to join the Southeastern Conference, and that put the Big 12 in a position where they'd added TCU already, but they needed a 10th member, right? I think that was part of their bylaws at that point. They needed a 10th member. So that decision then came very quickly. At some point, I think in like December or so of 2011, or maybe early January, I can't remember the exact timing.
So probably all that sort of, you know, networking you did and all the folks that you were talking to, then once Missouri left and they knew they needed to add someone else, you'd already sort of laid the groundwork to put West Virginia in a good position to be that school.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And you know, keep in mind, I mean, there's no secrets. Everybody knows the strength of a program over the years, you know, the Olympic sports, how strong, et cetera, how many conference championships, national championships. So, you know, we publicized, obviously, all the good things that, you know, we believe were, you know, part of the West Virginia University athletic culture. But everybody knows that information, right? There's no secrets. I mean, all these schools played against us over the years. You know, we won some games, lost some games, you know, so it's nothing that you uncover, right? But it's just, I think, being smart about, you know, sort of how you're working, you know, that the room, if you will, and that's, you know, that again, there's no rules, and you just have to sort of use your best judgment, communicate with, you know, very limited group of people. That's probably your university president and board chair. You know, you don't want to, you know, spread that circle too far, because rumors can be dangerous and can come back to haunt you a little bit. But it's just using your gut really to figure out how to maneuver through a pretty challenging universe. And then, you know, I know it was full of, it was probably 3 or 4 months of very high anxiety, you know, where my president was under enormous pressure, board chair, you know, you can't imagine everybody. You walk to a football game and 1,000 people, hey, where are we going to be next year? And what conference, you know, and, you know, you just, people care, right? And,
yeah.
And, but there is no answer at that point. So once that all got resolved, it was a big sort of lift, you know, of anxiety from everybody at the university.
We know there's all these different factors that go into it. And you mentioned with the Big Ten about, you know, TV and looking at markets you can get into where you get more eyeballs. I mean, we all know that TV is a big factor in it, but for some conferences, academics is a huge factor, you know, traditional rivalries, geography, you know, the strength of your programs, which Olympic sports you sponsor. I mean, there are obviously a number of different factors that go into the decision to invite a new member to a conference. How, looking at those though, and it's kind of a generalization, but how heavy of a factor is TV? Is it the factor all the time? Is it, you know, 50%? You know, what is the sort of the weight of TV in those factors, do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not really sure I'm able to answer that. Again, my experience was limited to, you know, this one instance with WVU over the course of 3 or 4 months. And I don't remember having any conversations with any broadcast partners or you know, streaming partners that really were just coming out of the start blocks, you know, back in 2011, 2012. Streaming wasn't, you know, anywhere near as popular as it is now, of course. So I you know, obviously television broadcasters, their involvement is critical to the, you know, ecosystem that we've built with college athletics. But I really don't recall, you know, any conversations with broadcasters. Now, that doesn't mean they weren't involved, but I just don't recall, you know, reaching out to them. I mean, we did spend a lot of time, you know, looking once we realized the Big 12, you know, could be a possibility. We spent a lot of time looking at travel costs and, you know, taking in the last 5 or 10 years of our Big East schedule and then comparing that to what it would be for football and men's basketball, mm-hmm. women's basketball, baseball, all those things. You know, so we wanted to make sure we had a pretty clear picture of both the positives and the negatives. And I'll tell you, you know, West Virginia University is a land grant institution. A lot of Big 12 schools are land grant institutions that go back to, you know, the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln signing the land grant bill. And schools like Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, you know, Kansas State, Iowa State, you know, they're very much like West Virginia, same kind of setup, same kind of structure. You know, heavy engineering, heavy ag, right? Agricultural program. So, you know, we actually felt like, wow, if this works, you know, these are like-minded institutions. At least a bunch of them were very like-minded, very much, you know, like WVU. And that wasn't necessarily the case in the Big East, just because you had a lot of the smaller Catholic schools, St. John's and Georgetown. You have private schools like Syracuse with great academics that necessarily didn't really sync up with sort of the culture that we had. So as we looked at this, we actually said to ourselves, wait a minute, this might be a conference where, you know, we're very much like our, you know, competitors, mm-hmm. you know, unlike quite honestly, but a good bit of the Big East, you know, we're small, rural, not urban, you know, public, not private, obviously. So that was a really pleasant surprise. And I would argue the last, you know, whatever it is, 10 years now in the Big 12, West Virginia has enjoyed, you know, great relationships with these other schools, because quite honestly, it's like looking in the mirror, you know?
Well, I as I think through sort of the TV aspect of it, you know, a lot of what I remember hearing back then and what I remember reporting back then was about, well, this school, you know, brings this market, or this school brings these eyeballs. It was all about, you know, TV markets and, you know, who was best positioned in that sense. You know, is that something that came up when you talked to the Big Ten or the ACC, was that West Virginia just wasn't a sort of TV market that they were looking for?
Well, this is before, I believe, just as, or maybe before the Big Ten network was sort of getting, you know, put together by Delaney. And it's, you know, it's been a great network for that conference. I don't think the ACC had even thought about a network at that point. Most of the broadcasts were regional broadcasts. I guess because of the location of Morgantown, relative to the other Big 12 schools, we brought a different time zone, number one, right? The East Coast time zone, and a little bit of a legacy in the East. So that may have been viewed as a positive. I just don't quite honestly recall any of those conversations. It seemed as though, what the Big 12 needed, certainly after Missouri left, they needed a program that had historically been solid, played a lot of games, won some big games, was involved with, high quality football. It seemed as though that factor was by far, the most important, certainly for the, for the Big 12 and its decision to invite West Virginia.
And we aren't going to get into advice for specific schools going through this right now, but I am wondering if you could give some sort of general advice to the athletic directors who are going through this right now. I'm sure this is a really stressful thing to be involved in. If you're either in a school that's thinking about leaving, or you're in a school that feels like you've been left behind by partners, what's your advice to athletic directors about how to sort of, take care of their own mental health through this process and how to navigate this?
Yeah, it is a stressful period because it's arguably the most important thing that an athletic director does. And many athletic directors never have to deal with realignment, right? But if you are dealing with it, it's no question it's stressful. I would argue that you need to play more offense than defense, depending on your circumstance, and that offense might look differently, but you need to play more offense than defense. I, in my case, really for about 3 months, this was during the 2011 football season, I, really didn't speak to the press. I kind of went, silent, if you will. Mm-hmm. And because, as soon as you start talking to the press, it's difficult to put whatever genie it gets out of the bottle. It's impossible to put that genie back. And everybody's writing so much. And this is, this is 10 years ago. Obviously, social media was a thing back then, but even more so today. So I think, the best thing that any AD can do who's in this position is, to work as hard as you possibly can, make every effort, that you possibly can. But, keep a very, very tight circle, of people that you confide in. And in my case, it was really the university president and then our board chair.
We should probably invite your wife on and have her give advice to the wives. I can't imagine being the wife of an athletic director going through this, just knowing, stress we all see our spouse go through at work. I imagine this is a big one. So tell your wife, thank you for your service too.
Well, she was incredibly supportive. And every spouse, I think, of an AD who's in this spot, and the same is true of a university president, right? And board chair, right? You don't want bad stuff to happen on your watch. So, and this could be bad. In our case, we ended up, I think, in a better spot, certainly at least for the last 10 years. We'll see, what happens with the Big 12 going forward. But, it is challenging. I don't envy anybody going through it. Try to keep upbeat. I'm one of those guys, when I get stressed, I work out. So I probably, after 3 or 4 months, I was probably in the best shape of my life, just because that's the way that I sort of try to, reduce my stress level.
Yeah, I do stress shopping. So yours is probably better. It doesn't affect your bank account like mine. Oh, thank you for joining us and giving us a little peek behind the curtain. I know I covered this as a journalist. It was really as I was leaving practicing law and going into journalism full time. And quite frankly, conference realignment probably gave me the boost that got me my full-time job at ESPN back then and got me my book deal. So I'm sure I should be thankful for conference realignment. I just remember trying to work full days as an attorney and report on conference realignment at the same time and the toll that took. So I wasn't anxious to see it start up all over again. But as somebody who covered it, with what I was able to get my hands on as a journalist, and particularly as a journalist who wasn't a beat reporter for any of the schools involved. And so I wasn't getting a lot of, you know, firsthand accounts of what was going on. I was looking more at sort of the finances and the impact on the other side. So I know this was really interesting to me too, to kind of hear what it's like to be on the school side as this is happening. So thank you for sharing it with our audience.
Well, my pleasure. It's fun to think back now, you know, on it. I had a little bit of sort of PTSD when I saw the news about Texas and Oklahoma. I thought, oh my gosh, here, you know, the dominoes are going to start falling again. And, we'll have to see how it all plays out, but, it is stressful. And I really don't envy any athletic director or other personnel, you know, within the department. I don't envy them having to go through this because it is existential, and that can be a real scary moment when you first realize that.
Well, thank you again for joining us. We will wish luck to all of those out there who are going through it this time around. Thank you so much for sharing, Oliver. We enjoyed having you.
My pleasure, Christy. All the best.
Thank you again to Oliver Luck for joining the Business of College Sports podcast. I know that it was really interesting for me to get to take a look behind the curtain and learn a little more about what it's actually like to be an athletic director going through conference realignment. I'm so appreciative for all of you for joining once again. For those of you who make this a weekly listen or those who have just dropped by for today, thank you for joining us. If I can ask you a favor, I would love if you took the time to go on your podcast platform of choice, whether that's iTunes or something else, and rate and review this podcast. That helps me attract more listeners. It helps me get great guests. I'm so appreciative to those of you who have already taken the time to do that. Thank you so much. I love doing this podcast and I love hearing from you. So if you want to shoot me an email, it's Christy@ChristyDosh.com or DM me on Twitter or Instagram. Suggest a guest. Tell me topics you want to know more about. I love hearing from you. I want to make this show something that interests you. Maybe it's something that helps you do your job better. So tell me what you need to know more about and I will try to find you a great guest who can deliver that. Thank you for tuning in this week. I will be back with you again next week. Until then, I hope you have a great week.